morning to everybody. It's 2.5 hours shooting at you of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That's me, and my broadside is right here. Stay with us for interviews with Richard Quigley, updates on Jerry Henry, Residente Unidos, City Council on Tuesday, Title IV Building Inspectors. Hey, everything you wanted to know on September 24th, 2000, but were afraid to ask and didn't know where to look.
Communist bloc. Roy Khan, one for all, Tuscanini, Dacron, Din Din, two balls, rock around the clock. Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's got a winning team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Prince's Great, Katie Grace, trouble in the Suez.
We didn't start the fire.
Tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, on this beautiful Sunday morning. Boy, it's not too hot, it's not too cold, it's just the right temperature, the way I like it. I'm Robert Norris, I'm your host for the next 2.5 hours, and should you choose to want to step into our living room here and pull up a chair, or pull up a mic in this case, give a call to 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's us. We broadcast in Santa Cruz without benefit of license, papal dispensation, large dispensations from the National Association of Broadcasters, kickbacks, or anything else. We're a collective. We invite your input on matters of community interest that you won't hear elsewhere. We discuss civil rights issues, particularly concerning poor people and renters. At least that's what I do on this show. There's a variety of shows. Free radio broadcasts 24 hours a day. And, hey, we want you to call. We want your input, so stick with us. And if you hear anything that raises your curiosity, your ire, your admiration, whatever, give us a call. 427-3772 is the phone number here. Lots of stuff happening today, as always. A number of news stories I want to follow up on. Last time I was doing some readings from the LA Times about the extensive police misconduct that is, some of which, I assume only the tip of the iceberg, is coming to light down there. There's an interesting primer story out. The primer is the City on a Hill Press first issue, for those of you who follow the local weeklies. That's the University of California Weekly, and it's kind of a glossy thing. You can find it free. It's given away in bookshops like Logos, Bookshop Santa Cruz, and other places where such free publications are stacked. That's the primer. I want to recommend you to an article that I wrote on the sleeping ban on campus that is up on UCSC campus. We talked a lot about the sleeping ban, the city's anti-homeless, no sleep from 11 to 8:30 a.m., no covering up with blankets during that period on pain of $54 fine ordinance, and the city council's refusal to deal with it or to advocate a strong, clear human rights position, or city council candidates' general refusal to deal with that, with some exceptions. The exceptions seem to be Steve Argue, Jake Fathy, possibly Jacob Althoff. We talked to him on Friday. And Scott Bugenthal, perhaps. We're looking to get people to come out for striking sections A and B of the city camping ordinance. But this primer article, which you can find, as I said, in this thing called The Primer, it's a sort of a thick version of the usual City on a Hill Press weekly that'll be coming out every week from the university, talks about what the campus's anti-homeless ordinance is. And it's a pretty nasty one. I recommend you check it out. We're hoping that students can make some difference in the upcoming elections by either A, casting their votes for candidates who are really going to vote to change the sleeping ban, and who knows who they are. I mean, I think, as I said, those Steve Argue has said he would. The two student candidates, Jake Fathy and Jacob Althoff, said they would as well. As I understand it, again, Althoff wasn't, of course, 3 days before quoted as saying he wouldn't change it and he would keep it, so he apparently is still kind of learning on the issue, if you want to use a charitable word, and I think we should be charitable with people who are new to the political arena. And the question, though, is how do you get the old-timers like Scott Bugenthal, Bonnie Moore? She's sort of a new-timer. In another way, she's an old-timer. She's got a lot of labor backing, so she's going to be under extensive pressure from establishment conservatives in the labor movement not to rock the boat around the traditionally pariah homeless issue. Actually, it's not really traditionally pariah on the streets or in common discourse or even among a lot of organizations that have said sleep a crime, no way, but among the people at the center like Marty Wormhout and John Laird and Andy Schifrin and Catherine Byers, all these policymakers at the center of organizations like SCAN, who actually hopefully have gotten some kind of opposition within these organizations in terms of their do-nothing Democratic Party vanilla policies, which essentially mean let's cling to power and do what we need to do to cling to power. That approach, I think, has been increasingly challenged over the last few years with such matters as tenant rights under the Residente Unidos revolt that happened last May when SCAN said to its elected mayor, Mayor Sugar, and its elected council, you've got to provide guarantees for people that you say you want to put into low-income housing before tearing down the housing that they currently have. That was the Dolphin and Lee apartments in the beach flats that are low-income. And we're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be doing updates on Jerry Henry. Jerry Henry, as you know, is the street minister, the concerned longtime local citizen who was counseling Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center youth, and in front of the coffee roasting company, Sheriff's Substation, Gottschalk's area down there in the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, and became the target of First Alarm Security, Sheriff Deputy Hemingway, and other employees, I should say managers, of the manager of the Gottschalk's manager of the or the owner of the coffee roasting company and the Rancho Liquors. They wanted him out of there. He was telling young people they could sit around there, that they didn't have to leave when the police said get up and go, because they had a right to assemble in public spaces. And because they wouldn't submit to this new police state mentality, which apparently is supposed to be taken for granted by all of us now, we're all supposed to roll over and bark like a dog, or maybe purr like a cat when a police officer comes by and strokes us on the belly or whacks us on the back. He was taken to court, first held on $100,000 bail. This is not a joke, $100,000 bail twice, for essentially disturbing the ideas of the Gottschalk's manager, Claudia Enderby, was that her name, who wanted him away from the front of her store, even though that was public space. And she claimed she had him taken to court on issues of interfering with a business, even though he wasn't inside the business at the time. So the idea that the business has the right to manipulate, suppress, censor, and even expel people in public spaces, frightening idea, one that was begun by people like Scott Kennedy in 1994 when he passed the downtown ordinances as mayor that year, and has continued increasingly as we see massive expenditures for the police department, anything for our cops, not $7 million overruns at the police station, with no questioning from the city council, with no public outcry by the candidates as of yet in the current city council race. I have not heard, other than perhaps Steve Argue, one candidate talk about cost overruns in the police station and the endless black hole that money goes into around the police department, law enforcement taking up, what is it? The police department takes up a third of the budget. Law enforcement, if you add Parks and Rec, more than 50%. It's incredible what's going on. And again, a lot of that related to the drug war. Jerry Henry was there dealing with the drug war in Aptos. He was helping kids on heroin, getting them off heroin. This is testified to in court under oath by kids. Rather than sending them out of town on the next train, Henry was helping where the police and the social service agencies really have not been that successful in helping and dealing with the heroin problems. And he was also helping with the civil rights problems, the civil liberties problems, the fact that young people are, you know, in a sense, like homeless people, they're the blacks, they're the niggers, if you will, to use that forbidden term, of the 2000s, of the new millennium. They are the despised class. They are the oppressed class. You are not allowed to assert rights as a human being in that class if the police officer says no. And it's not a question of law. It's a question completely of officer discretion. That's why we call it police state. If it had to do with actual violations of the laws, we could condemn bad laws and try to have them changed, which would be a trial in itself, because people like Kennedy, people like Byers, I would fear people like Emily Riley, want to work with this sort of downtown businesses as their primary concern in Santa Cruz and in other cities where they have their analogous groups, rather than assert the rights of the entire community. They're looking to enter into some kind of very rather narrow partnership with the business community. That's my concern, and that's my fear. And they're going to do this because they have a sort of a easy road to power. I know Byers is leaving power, but I'm afraid we're going to see her back in the supervisors soon. It's an incoming call. We're talking about Jerry Henry. I'm going to try to talk a little about Jerry Henry to this guy on the phone, or this woman when she calls in, just to kind of set up the situation, because we're going to be talking more about that in the next few minutes. But let's see what's cooking here.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Really?
Ah, this sounds like Richard Quigley to me.
Yeah?
You are, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, an activist of sorts, or perhaps you wouldn't call yourself an activist, a citizen advocate, perhaps?
Sure.
And I know that you've been involved in the Jerry Henry case. You've seen his trial where he was taken to court for supposedly being a public nuisance. I've been explaining on the air, which I don't know if you've been able to hear it. We do stream on the internet at www.microwave.net/FRSC, in case anybody out there wants that. It's, again, www.microradio.net/FRSC if you're outside the range of free radio, which is about, you know, Santa Cruz wide. And we've been talking a bit, Richard, about kind of the history of the harassment of Jerry Henry and just the general implications of that, how it's sort of police state stuff, because it isn't really justified by any laws. The laws are chosen by the police and the district attorney's office to further the objectives, which seem to be we've decided we don't want this guy there. But you've been kind of following this case. I know he has a hearing coming up on Monday for retrial at 8:30 a.m. in Department 2 for all of you folks who are going to have been following that case. And Richard, were you at his hearing on Friday when he, I guess it was postponed, did anything happen at that hearing, do you know?
No, it postponed it on Thursday, so really nothing
Thursday,
happened on
sorry.
Friday, except they had put it on the record that it was postponed until Monday.
And I guess what happened was Jerry was tried in a jury trial. He was the main charge the jury hung on, the question of this well-concocted bringing in incidents from every side of the moon and every days in the last 3 years. He was some sort of, quote, public nuisance, whatever that may be. I regard the DA as the major public nuisance, certainly in the county or one of them. And Kate Canlis is probably an even worse public nuisance. I mean, they're all public nuisances as far as I'm concerned, and they don't deal with the drug war problem, which is ripping this country apart and destroying the Constitution. But Jerry Henry was trying to deal with the drug problem I was explaining. He had some success in helping young people to assert their rights, develop self-respect, get off heroin, and he got good accounts about that from the young people in court when they testified for him. He was found guilty of what? Interfering with the business because he spoke too loudly. How would you sum up the results of that trial, Richard?
Well, although the DA likes to claim it as a victory, the fact is what they did was, after having on three different occasions, I believe it was three different occasions, having wanted to or started prosecutions against him and dropping them the day of jury selection for everything from what they call intentional interference with a business, with it, which is a perversion of that statute, to trespassing in a public place, which is a perversion of concept. They couldn't put him on trial for anything because he didn't do anything. So they just dropped these charges. They would harass him with them and arrest him with them and all that stuff, and then the day of trial they would stop him. And so, frustrated by the fact that the law didn't allow them to work out their fascist social cleansing program, what they came up with this ingenious idea of putting him on trial for being a public nuisance, criminally.
Okay, public nuisance is usually a civil matter, right?
It's virtually always a civil matter, as the judge repeatedly explained to the prosecutor.
And a public nuisance is usually not a person. It is a condition on a property, right?
Well, it's kind of interesting. The only other public nuisance that I know of that had been charged in that shopping center, or the only other public nuisance action, was against the shopping center itself for barricading off the seating area in the town square area of the shopping center. And that action was brought by me, paid for by Jerry.
And that was when they were attempting to they had given Jerry a stay-away order from the coffee roasting company. And when he sat on the benches nearby, they were trying to make those areas exclude them from him, too, because he would meet with the young people there, and they decided that was an activity they didn't want to permit.
Well, they taped off the area. Yeah, they taped off that seating area in the name of going to do construction, which, of course, there was no construction ever done. And it literally took a trip into court to have it removed as a public nuisance, because it did, in fact, interrupt the public's right to sit in the community area and hang out and socialize. And so the morning of the day the matter was supposed to go before the court, they took all the barriers down. But that was the only other public nuisance that had ever been brought about. But that is typical of what public nuisance things are about.
Well, Jerry was not found guilty of public nuisance. It was a hung jury. I guess that we're going to find out whether that case goes to retrial.
Well, and the reason for that is that because the crimes that they alleged and arrested him for lack sufficient evidence for him to be convicted on just them, they brought in this ingenious plan of going for a public nuisance trial. That way they could talk about everything that he had done in defense of himself for over 4 years, so that it was an incredible opportunity to demonize him.
Can you give I know you've done this many times before, Richard, for those who haven't heard, give an example of the kind of stuff that Jerry was being subjected to and that young people there were also being subjected to.
Well, it was basically a belief instilled in the merchants that they could control the types of people that were present outside their businesses. And that belief was instilled in them by the sheriff's office. And so the sheriff told these merchants they could go out there and through First Alarm Security and ultimately through the sheriff's office, and they could tell people to move along. And they tried to get this loitering thing going. And, of course, I've been accosted with it several times myself, Jerry numerous times, and the young people repeatedly. They just, some First Alarm guard would walk up and say, okay, it's time for you to go now. And people normally, because they've been to authority, they pack up and leave. And so the merchants were getting all high on this power trip of being able to regulate who was outside their stores.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry, the first time he was approached, it was by First Alarm, and he was ordered to move along, and it was based on his appearance and nothing more. He's got long hair and a beard. Looks like one of them old Santa Cruz type people used to run around loose 20 years ago with great regard are now on the list of undesirables. Anyway, he instantly saw that as a move toward social cleansing and protested it when it was being done by First Alarm, only to have the sheriff's office move in a sheriff's substation to back up that behavior from First Alarm and incorporate it into their policies for their new office there in the shopping center.
Mm-hmm. And as a consequence of all this, he was, found guilty on 4 charges of interfering with a couple of interfering with a business, and there was some other...
I think there was a disturbing the peace, there was an intentional interference with a business, and I think there was a trespassing in a public place.
And how long did this whole trial take? Do you remember?
It was just over a week, but that was the trial. We're not talking about the amount of court time that led up to, because there were a lot of motion things and stuff that went on.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just cracked the book on how much money will be spent, because if the courts follow the law, which is, as you know, one of those ad hoc and arbitrary things, but it might just happen that they follow the law. If they follow the law, they have to throw out the conviction. And the reason is, and it's clear in the law, that you can't bring up things that happened that were, in some cases, not even reported to the police, much less he'd ever been put on trial for, and use them as evidence of a crime, so that these particular charges, these disturbing the peace and trespassing charges for which he was convicted, came as a result of the demonization of the prosecution for the criminal prosecution for the public nuisance thing. It allowed them to bring all kinds of stuff into the record that was just, you know, first of all, not credible, and secondly, nobody could climb out from under that heap.
It should be said, however, that they did persuade 11 members of the jury. Only one held out, right?
Yeah, which is probably the scariest concept or the scariest idea going.
Mm-hmm.
It's an indicator of a liberal fascism in this county that I think the county should bear with shame. The fact that anyone would see the validity of that type of a prosecution, particularly of a disabled man. They start allowing criminal prosecutions of people for being a public nuisance, and my God, where's that line going to be drawn?
Interesting enough, yeah, Jerry Henry is disabled in the sense that he is prone to suffer when he's put under pressure. He how would you describe his disability?
Well, he's a very spiritual individual, and so he's keen spiritually, and so he sees things that you and I might not see because of that keenness in spirituality. So that would look to you or me as just a misguided public servant trying to tell us to move along. He sees as part of a greater threat to the public from a social cleansing standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So he has, I think he's blessed with too much sensitivity of these types of political abuses.
But he has been found to be, by medical authorities, disabled?
Yeah.
And what does that mean in medical terms?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, not being a physician myself, I think in essence what the psychiatrist tried to explain was this sensitivity.
He just suddenly, in other words, when he gets under a lot of pressure, he suddenly can't function, he can't sleep.
Oh, can't function at all. I mean, cannot function at all. He becomes, at times, depending on how extremely he's assaulted, his ability to sort what's going on and because he sees it on this grand scale.
But there's never been a history of any kind of violence connected with any of this.
No. In fact, in the face of violence or even the potential for, he shrinks, just shrivels up. I mean, there's nothing. No,
mm-hmm.
No, none. He doesn't even have a dedicated resistance to violence.
Well, I noted before you called that all these crimes, so-called, that he was accused of, and the few, I guess, disturbing the peace that he was convicted of, and interfering with the business, trespass to interfere with the business, were nonviolent crimes that actually produced no property damage. They're sort of a form of saying, oh, you're talking a little too loudly about having been harassed by the police.
They did not like the volume of his protest to being the lead victim in this social cleansing program.
Mm-hmm.
And so they took the business interests of these businesses and said that their interests superseded his right not to be harassed over being disabled. And they made that choice early on.
Well, we all know sales are important, Richard.
Well, I was pretty much explained to me by the guy that tried that case that they have a right to make a profit.
Yeah, man.
And I just do not believe that's true. I believe that a business has a right to make a profit if they are a well-run business.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they're a bunch of idiots, they don't have a right to make a profit.
Well,
and they don't have a right to run around and blame everybody inside and outside the store for their failure and have the government come in and back that act. I mean, that's how weak can that get?
Well, I think you actually got into a meeting with some of these profiteers or profit seekers, if you will, these business people with the Aptos Chamber of Commerce in a discussion with the two DA contenders, Kate Canales and Ron Ruiz, and you had some rather eye-opening observations, right?
Well, one portion of that was kind of interesting. I got my hands on a tape recording of the, I guess you'd call it a forum, a candidates forum for the two candidates for district attorney, Canales and Ruiz, at the Chamber of Commerce meeting. I think it was a breakfast meeting on the 21st. And although I'm It should show up in the papers here pretty soon. I'm transcribing the entire content for one of the local papers, and the part that struck me and that I pulled out so that I could get it down to Jerry's attorney, because I thought it might be of some import to the public defender's office to know.
This is the public defender that never shows up. That's our friend Christine. What's her name?
Anyway,
yeah. I had to say that because
I thought they might need to know. You know. What it was that our district attorney had to say about these things, and perhaps maybe the incoming district attorney. And I did, in fact, get a hold of Kate Canlis when I got the copy of this.
She's the challenger for district attorney, right?
Yes, and I talked to her she was very, very open and stuff. We chatted for well over a half hour, and I found it to be amicable. She's obviously a woman with a lot of experience in prosecutor's office. I hold up very strong against her. She's got a little bit more admiration for police than is comfortable for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I don't admire and respect police. It's that I do not ignore the fact that sometimes their credibility suffers at the hand of their egos.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think that she's got that perspective. But that notwithstanding, at this meeting, there was a question put to these candidates that they had an opportunity to answer. They gave them 2 minutes to answer.
This was the Aptos Chamber of Commerce meeting a week or two ago?
Yes. No, on the 21st, last Thursday morning.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Question is, as you are aware, the business community can be affected by nuisance crimes. For example, skateboarding, public drunkenness, roadside vendors. How would you work with the community to address these issues? Well, Kate kind of walked through the whole thing and essentially said that she knew Sergeant Hemingway at the shopping center there, and so all the people there would know him as a guy that operates the local substation. She's talking about knowing him and what a great guy he is, and that she would do everything that she could. But she kind of walked right through and dealt with things like public drunkenness and shoplifting and petty theft. That's what she sort of focused on.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that she would do all she could.
None of which Jerry Henry was ever accused of.
Right? Exactly. And wasn't part of the question. What Jerry Henry was accused of wasn't even part of the question. But then an interesting thing happened, because here came Ron Ruiz. And if you can hold with me, I will, although I'll editorialize as I read it, I will read you his 2-minute response if you've got the time.
Sure.
Okay, Ron Ruiz answered, "I too know the good sergeant," referring to Hemingway. "And let me tell you what we've done about these kinds of problems. Not what we're going to do, but what we've done." Now, these kinds of problems, referring back, remember, to public drunkenness, skateboards, and street vendors. You with me? Anyway,
In
particular, I want to tell you about the Rancho Del Mar problem, as Sergeant Hemingway is very much aware. We had an individual out there, a couple of individuals, who over a period of years were disrupting the interests of Gottschalk, hanging out there by the coffee roasting.
Wait a minute. Disrupting the interests of
Gottschalk
by hanging out there.
At
the coffee roasting.
And that is really the way that they saw that.
Those
Gottschalk people.
No, wait. This isn't your interpretation. These are the words that Ron Ruiz used.
These are out of his mouth.
Go ahead.
People had gone to the extent of getting restraining orders, people that worked in Gottschalk's. Now, his reference there had to do with Claudia Easterby coming out and attacking me one day because I was outside the store talking with a guy, and she came up and ordered me to move along, and I told her to blow it out her backside, get away, and leave me alone. And she went down there, and they gave her a restraining order against me based on a single incident. I mean, none of the legal criteria. But that's the restraining order. It had nothing to do with Jerry, just so you understand.
And that restraining order is no longer in force.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it was a heck of a problem that had gone on for years and years. Well, let me tell you what we did.
This is Ron Ruiz again.
I'm sorry. Yes, Ron Ruiz says, "It was a heck of a problem that had gone on for years and years, and let me tell you what we did. We prosecuted that individual," he said. "None other than George Kovacevic, my chief deputy, took that case. And he took that case, and he interviewed at least 50 people. And as the good sergeant here can tell you, there was an uproar that we were making too much about this, that we were spending too much money on this. The judge tried to get us to settle that case short of going to trial with it, because, my God, why are we going to take the jury's time? Now, I'm going to break away again right there because I want you to understand that Judge Kelsey sat on that case. Judge Kelsey tried. Now, they say they tried to get him to settle that case short of going to trial on it. No. What Judge Kelsey did was explain to George Kovacevich, not once, not twice, repeatedly, this is civil. Why are you trying to prosecute this man criminally? Repeatedly. The higher courts have never upheld a conviction on this type of case. Now, why are you prosecuting this man criminally?
And what do you think was the real reason they were prosecuting him criminally, Richard?
I think the real reason was so that he could go to the Chamber of Commerce when he was running for district attorney and brag about how he took out this public nuisance.
Well, it's harder to get a conviction on a criminal case because that requires proof beyond a reasonable doubt rather than a preponderance of the evidence.
Absolutely.
And so why, I mean, you think it's sexier to do a criminal prosecution, something like that?
Well, and there was no basis for criminal or civil. They couldn't have got anything against him civilly because it wasn't there. What they could do, though, was they could drag all this other stuff in this criminal case and drag it in and put this whole 4 years of testimony, most of it, by the way, the critical portions, absolutely patently false.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had people come in and flat perjured themselves.
And you say this through your own personal knowledge?
Oh, yeah.
Because you were present for numerous encounters.
Well, I was there long enough, and I know Jerry Henry well enough to know one of the people that came in and testified against him said that he was out there spitting on old women and children and harassing old women and children. There was never one police report filed on these alleged incidents of spitting on and harassing people.
Now,
one ever reported to the police department.
How many pages of police reports would you say there were on this issue?
Oh, there's probably 50 of them.
50 pages or 50 police reports?
50 pages of police reports, probably 30 or 35 police reports.
Well, getting back to one final thing before I go back to the Ron Ruiz thing. Again, this is a question, I guess, for those of us who are following the case. Couldn't the same public nuisance argument have at least been made in civil court, and wouldn't it have required a lower standard of proof?
Oh, yes, and they could have gone into civil court, except that these companies would have had to spend their money there instead of giving them to Ron Ruiz for campaign funds. But they could have gone into civil court and asked for an injunction against him, which is what they tried to do.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to enjoin him from being in that area. They had tried it civilly and failed.
Well, he did have an injunction preventing him from going in the coffee roasting company.
That's correct.
And being in a certain area out there,
I guess they wanted
an injunction that would bar him from the entire shopping center.
Oh, yeah. And what you have to understand is that they burn up all their abuse of process when they got the injunction keeping him out of the roasting company.
I see.
They couldn't go back in and try that same stunt a second time.
So instead they got Ron Ruiz to do their dirty
exactly.
work?
Exactly.
So tell me more about what Ron said at this meeting.
Okay, he went on, he talked about how the judge tried to get him to settle it because they're taking the jury's time. And then he says, quote, it's going to cost, and then he stopped right there and took it up again, it's going to take about 2 weeks to try. Now, he knows what the judge said it was going to cost. The judge said it was going to cost between $50,000 and $100,000 just to do the trial. Never mind all the stuff before, never mind all the stuff later. But he didn't mention that figure. He jumped right off it when he got to that portion of the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he continued. The defense attorney was overplaying this. Why did we have somebody at that high level trying this case? I'll tell you why, he said. Because we heard so many complaints. We were so tired of hearing what's going on over at Rancho Del Mar. And George Kovacevich took that case to trial, and he won that case. Now, George Kovacevich, would you like to know why George Kovacevich told the jury that he was trying that case?
Now, you are saying this. We're leaving Ron Ruiz, and this we're back to Richard Quigley. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're back to Richard Quigley. Would you like to know the truth about why George Kovacevich tried that case? Or at least, assuming that you could count on Kovacevich to tell the truth, what he told the jury.
What did he tell the jury?
He didn't tell the jury that he took it because it was important to the merchants of Aptos. He told the jury that he took that case because nobody else in that office would take it.
Hmm.
Ron Ruiz didn't point that out to these merchants, that this was such a dirty bath that nobody would take it but George Kovacevich. Now, George Kovacevich, in case you've forgotten, is the brilliant attorney that figured out under the Danner regime to put some little girl on trial for being, pardon me, some murdering little girl on trial for being a vampire. Mm-hmm. Remember that case a few years back?
Vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, that was Kovacevic's brainstorm, just like this one. And, of course, he lost this case. Now, Ruiz said he won that case. No, he did not win the public nuisance criminal charge case. He did not win that.
This was the one against Jerry Henry.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. He got a couple of piddly little charges that won't stand because of the way that the evidence was given to the jury.
Now, it was...
But the closing line, mm-hmm. and here's the closing line from Ron Ruiz, and this one makes my skin shift. And I don't think you're going to see Mr. Henry out in front of Gottschalk's for a long, long time.
So, in other words, even though there has been, I guess he's currently under a stay-away order, right, from the entire shopping center?
Well, and the way they accomplished that was to make all these false arrests against him and make it a condition of probation,
mm-hmm.
or a condition of staying out of jail.
But he hasn't been sentenced yet to that.
No.
So, now, we may learn sentencing isn't going to happen until October, as I understand it.
Well, I don't know what Kelsey told him during the trial, before the trial started, while he was sitting there trying to tell them that they were being stupid. He explained to him that even if they got a conviction, that Mr. Henry's conditions of probation were going to be substantially less than the conditions of OR are right now. So even if you convict him, I'm not going to do to him what he's under right now.
And will Kelsey keep his word on this?
Well, I don't know. He lied to me when I was in there testifying. He told me he was going to let me explain something that he didn't, and he's proven to me he makes stuff up. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what he said.
So, was there any response to the Chamber of Commerce, or did it, any further discussion about the Henry case?
No. Well, there was a response when he explained that Mr. Henry wasn't going to be out in front of Gottschalk for a long, long time. There was a rousing applause.
Was anybody wearing their Nazi insignia and their little Klan helmets?
Well, of course they were, but they were subtle.
I see. Well, subtlety is always good in these matters.
Sure. They take the form of little Chamber of Commerce pins.
Well,
that's your little Nazi sign in this county, as far as I can tell.
We're talking to Richard Quigley, who's a citizen advocate and has been a very close observer of the proceedings against activist Jerry Henry, who, again, will be coming into court tomorrow at 8:30, I guess, for a hearing before Judge Kelsey, or Commissioner Kelsey, actually. He's a retired judge sitting as a commissioner in Department 2 on the issue of a retrial, I guess, on the case of, is it a retrial for everything or just the public nuisance?
No, what they're in essence asking for, in layman's terms, is a mistrial. Just mm-hmm. have him declare the whole thing a mistrial, and then the DA will have to bring it again.
All the convictions will be thrown out?
Oh, yeah.
Including the charges where he was found unanimously guilty?
Well, those are the ones that she's moving to have thrown out.
I see. And has Ron Ruiz or George Kovacevic or whoever is carrying this poo-poo pot around at the moment stated that they want to have a retrial of the public nuisance charges?
Oh, Kovacevic threatened when they walked out of the court, when he'd lost that case, that they were going to bring it again. He threatened it in court and out.
Right, well, he threatened then, but has there any action been taken to do that?
No. No, and if this thing is declared a mistrial, I'd bet a dollar to a dime. It depends on where it falls relative to election. But if it's after the election, it won't be retried regardless of which of the two candidates does it.
Mm-hmm.
It may be refiled if it happens before the election to make it look like they're going to do something, and then they'll drop it the day of jury selection. It's a criminal cases for against individuals for being a public nuisance are virtually unheard of, and as Judge Kelsey pointed out, everyone that has gone forward has been overturned on appeal. Mm-hmm. It's not a charge you can make.
Now, about this election, you've been kind of an observer, and you've been involved in the sheriff's elections yourself. You ran for sheriff.
Ran for Congress in 93, ran for sheriff in 94, and would have run again in 98, but they made it a law that you got to be a cop to run for sheriff.
And you actually have a lot more. You say that, you know, you have, shall we say, a bit more skepticism toward some police officers than, let's say, Kate Canlis does, but I would say you have a lot less skepticism toward the police department generally. The sheriff's department than I do. So you have a kind of you have a belief that possibly there are some bad apples in the sheriff's department, not possibly, definitely, that have to be weeded out, but that perhaps there's no fundamental institutional corruption in the sheriff's department that needs to be.
I think that there's a real good possibility that because of what we do and how we do it, that you have met nothing but the worst. And I have had an opportunity because of what I do and how I do it to have met some of the best mm-hmm. as well as some of the worst. So that it's a little easier for me to know that the good cops outnumber the bad cops substantially in the sheriff's department. The problem in the sheriff's department is, at the very top, Mark Tracy is a bad cop. And he's just a bad cop.
And can you give us a few specific reasons why you say that?
Well, yeah. He has allowed his office to develop and maintain the standard belief. We are the police. We can do anything we want.
Now, how has this shown itself?
Well, it's shown itself, it's manifested itself in all kinds of behavior, including what they've done to Jerry Henry.
But in other cases, let's say.
What they've done to me? I don't know a lot outside my world, but I know that I went down to some lying bad cops. My girlfriend got attacked and beat up, put on trial at the hands of lying bad cops, all of whom are being promoted like mad dogs through this whole thing by Tracy. In fact, I told Kate Canlis during the course of our conversation, I'll go on record here, that I think that you'll find out that the reason that Rancho Del Mar became a focal point of so much attention from the sheriff's office, and I mean, we've had days down there where we've had 6 and 7 patrol units down there, dozen deputies, to deal with Jerry or myself over some stupid thing. And I believe that that all happened because Mark Tracy lives right down the street, and I think Mark Tracy's wife, sort of like that woman that ran Gottschalk's, she shops in the shopping center.
I see.
And it couldn't be any more political personal, and a good sheriff would never allow that to happen.
We're talking to Richard Quigley, who's activist here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Actually, he's a advocate. I'm the activist. You're the advocate. I'm not quite sure what the difference was necessarily, but this is 96.3 FM, and we're about to thank you and cut you off the line here, not because you aren't worth listening to. You are.
Well, let me. Could I do my?
Sure.
Since I've done all this work, can I do my campaign pitch?
Please do.
I think that we will be well served in this community if Kate Canlis is elected to the district attorney's office. Now, all them Canlis supporters are out there dancing up and down right now because they think that's real neat that I would say that, but they don't like the reason why. I fear that if Ron Ruiz is elected, we're stuck with him forever, and I know him to be a terrible district attorney. The election for the actual office, the DA, doesn't happen for 2 years. In case people don't know it, this is a special election this year. The regular election year for DA will happen in 2002. So there will be an opportunity to get rid of whoever goes, if Canlis goes in now, and she proves to be as bad as I think she is also, in 2002 we get some relief. If we elect Ruiz right now, he's in. We're stuck. Politics dictate he will be around forever. Nobody will get a foothold on him. So I recommend that we elect Kate Canlis because she would be the weak candidate in 2002. Now, if she gets in there and does a terrific job, cool. We got rid of Ruiz, and we got a good DA. If she gets in there and does a terrible job, Ruiz is already gone, and then we can elect somebody proper for that job in 2002. So there's a strategy involved in this.
There's an unpaid political announcement here for Kate Canlis. Thank you, Richard. Anything else before we go?
That's it for me.
Hey,
I'm just trying to fill whatever your need is for your people to hear what it is I got to say.
And you have done just that, and I hope that we'll see you in court tomorrow morning, though we have actually a conflicting meeting, and I'm going to have to be running between the two. That's.
You know, I don't go down there.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I don't go down there is that Bill Kelsey hates me so much as an individual that I don't think it does Mr. Henry any good to have me even on the planet, knowing that I know him, with Bill Kelsey sitting on that case. So I just...
That's
Jerry
a sad thing to hear.
Possible, I stay away.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, sir.
All my friends are semi-famous, more than Andy, less than Amos. The Guinness Book can't quite claim us. My ex-backup singer's ex-husband's brother-in-law invented Velcro. He sold the patent. She disowned it. And my ex-neighbor's ex-husband's great-great-uncle was a Supreme Court justice who determined that the tomato is a fruit. Well, at least it was at the time, according to U.S. law. And my ex-girlfriend sued the power company for muzzling her freedom of speech. She's a reporter. She won. They issued an order. She can't talk about it. But I can. But I don't know anything about it. All my friends are semi-famous, even to ex-ignoramus. The government would like to blame us, but they can't quite name us. My mom went to high school with the ex-wife of the ex-director of the CIA. She wasn't ex till 30 years later. 30 years later, Pete Seeger stepped on her foot. It was my mom's foot, but the CIA made him do it. And my friend Chris talked James Watt into using bamboo sticks at an angle instead of chemicals straight in to keep the dogs off his rhododendrons. And not only that, Chris's truck, not James Watt's. All my friends are semi-famous. Some people sometimes sort of acclaim us. Less than spins, but more than Marty's. People look up when we show up at parties. G-L-O, wrong song. I gave a speech when I was 19, and some big news Brzezinski asked 3 questions, and I don't remember what they were, because they were really, 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 really dumb, okay? And also, I was interviewed on the BBC World Service, and 40 million people heard me all over India. And 2 of them still remember it. And I'll never meet them. And one of them's probably a professor of popular culture with a focus on political satire, and the other's probably really, 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 really cute. But it's all right, because I am very, 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 very semi-famous in my own house. All my friends are semi-famous, more than Andy, less than Amos. The Guinness Book can't quite claim us.
Hello, Jerry Henry.
Oh, Robert.
We're on the air with you, Jerry. You're live. As I promised, we're calling you from...
Live and in exile.
And you're also in color, we hope, and... But in exile, indeed. We just talked to Richard Quigley and got a kind of clear overview of not just the trial, but also of the recent September 21st statements by Ron Ruiz that you are not going to be at that shopping center, boy, for a long time.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the man without a country, you know, that old story.
I do, indeed.
Just without the village.
Yeah, Edward Everett Hale, I think, was a writer of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I did it in history class when I was a kid.
Well, you may be a man dispossessed from Aptos, where you've lived, what, for 30 years?
Oh, yeah, 25.
And your family has been there for that period of time, too. But you have been checking things out downtown on Pacific Avenue, keeping an eye on what's been going on down there,
well,
working at the, I guess, at the various food pantries?
Yeah, I've been working at St. Francis some, but this... This trial's kind of got me down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And staying at home playing in the garden some. And staying out of town, it's real weird when you have those people lie about you on the witness stand like they do. What it does shakes your confidence on what can happen to you out there.
Yeah, it's... I know
I've been going downtown a little bit. And
mm-hmm.
And going down to St. Francis a little bit. And being a good exiled citizen... I guess that guy in that story just sailed around the world on ships after that.
Well, they made him. That was a man who said he damned the United States and said he never wanted to hear the name of the United States again.
Yeah, it's like the grand jury guy told me that when I tried to make my grand jury complaint, their secretary told me that I ought to go to River Street. That's what they had made for people like me.
Great.
And
it's time for a complaint about her. I mean, I'm afraid even...
Him.
Oh, him. Even the complaints about... Sorry about that. The complaints about... By whoever are, you know, something that deserved to be considered on their merits, obviously. Yeah, that the man without a country, he was told he had to sail from sea to sea, and the crew was instructed never to mention the name of the United States, and it was, of course, a big schlocky story about how much he loved the United States. Although, you know, I think those of us who stand up as you do and for the rights of other people...
Well,
are in fact,
rights too.
And your own rights, but I think you were initially they didn't like the fact that you were showing young people how to
Oh, I think initially, you know, back at the very beginning, it's just they didn't like the way I looked, and mm-hmm. people like me weren't supposed to be standing around down there.
So what you needed to do was get a shave and a haircut, possibly wear
I had some high official in the DA's office tell me it was my fault for losing, that I should have shaved and put on a suit.
Well, you know, if you could have saved everybody a lot of trouble if you, you know, simply, you know, change completely.
Social cleansing. And
yeah, cleanse yourself, and then you can go around and help cleanse everybody else.
Yeah, people aren't supposed to be like me. Yeah.
Well, I think
you're the next choice candidate they're going to be coming after.
First. Yeah, actually, I'm going to be talking about that later in the show. I'm already getting the drumbeat of...
Being a public nuisance?
Veronica Lopez Duran of Mercy Charities Housing is circulating statements that I'm persona non grata down at the Dolphin Apartments, but I'm getting different stories from Dolphin tenants, so we'll see who says what on that one.
I'm sure if you get exiled, it'll be for your mouth.
Well, perhaps we can join each other in exile and have a grand entrance together. I guess, and you'll be tomorrow down at the 8:30 Department 2 hearing for retrial, right?
Yeah, 8:30 tomorrow. It'll be interesting to see what goes on.
Is there any way people can be supportive that you would advise? I mean, or can get more information?
Yeah, I think people ought to watch this real closely. I mean, I encourage anybody to come down and watch.
Is there a phone number people can call if they can't make it tomorrow?
They've always been able to call my number, 688-8557.
688-8557. If you didn't get that, call 423-HUFF, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, and we'll give it to you and any other numbers that are put out on the show that you didn't have time to catch. Jerry, anything you want to add?
Well, I sure kind of hope they don't just exile me to River Street.
More than hope. I think we can make a stand against that.
They may put a boundary around River Street and tell me I'm not there.
You're invited, by the way, as is everyone else, to come to the Homeless Working Group, which meets at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, for all you early birds, at Tastings Restaurant, which is the restaurant in the Holiday Inn, which is sort of about
right next door to where I'll be.
Exactly. So if you're welcome to show up there and kind of talk with us. And we planned the meeting early so we could get rolling, and we, of course, didn't know that you had this Monday morning court thing at the time.
Yeah, I didn't until Thursday.
Maybe some of us can go with you, or we can arrange something, but this is a meeting to talk about a very lethal city council meeting that's coming up on Tuesday, which I'm going to be talking about on the air, which has all kinds of powers for building inspectors that are going to be passed, a new zoning plan that makes it more difficult, sort of goes right along with the beach south of Laurel, density reductions.
It's all part of that giant social cleansing program.
It looks like there's some real problems that aren't being discussed, real powers given to city employees that for which they won't be accountable, legal standards that are very obscure here that allow building inspectors to see something and march onto your property, and if you don't let them in, they can go to an administrative judge rather than a sitting judge for a warrant, a judge appointed by the very department that they're serving. And it's not good, and that's going to be in the evening, on Tuesday evening. And also, the Dolphin Lee matter is coming back, not on the open agenda, where we could actually
I think this social cleansing,
hear that,
that's why I encourage the masses.
On the closed session.
That it's going to affect the masses.
Well, Jerry, thank you, and maybe we'll feel free to look in on us at Tastings tomorrow at 8, and we'll try to look in on you at 8:30.
All right, you take care, Robert.
Hey, thank you, Jerry.
We'll see you, Fox.
And I think I'd be depressed, too, if I was not just facing a bullshit legal system and a DA intent on hounding me to make political advantage in an election campaign, but just the blow of hearing people who should know better not know better. I found that often most recently in a homeless homelessness and housing committee that happened on Friday. I got screamed at by the chair because I asked her to recognize herself rather than simply start talking as she has been in the habit of doing. And she then began denouncing me as a disruptive influence and so forth. And it made me put me under a cloud for the rest of the day. I've kind of bounced back. And frankly, I like this woman in other ways in terms of her standing up for the rights of people to have affordable housing, though I hear others say that she doesn't know what she's talking about half the time. But nonetheless, I wish we could. I guess we have disputes among ourselves, but when you're taking it from all sides, it's easy to get depressed, and you gotta fight back, because I think those of us who are fighting for basic civil rights for poor people and for homeless people are doing an important job, even if it doesn't look that way at the moment, and we have to tell ourselves that, and it's nice if we're told that as well. So call up and tell me what a fine job I'm doing at 427-3772 here on Free Radio. 427-3772. A couple of quick announcements about what's happening today. The candidates are at it again. There's candidate rallies coming up, kickoff rallies they call them, and actually there's some good candidates, in my view, who have kickoff rallies today. I haven't quite gone to the extent of endorsing Bonnie Moore, who's got a rally, but I think Bernard Klitzner has. He's on the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom group, as well as the Homeless Working Group, as well as the SCAN Housing and Homelessness Subcommittee covering the Dolphin Project, coming up with that forum, televised forum on October 28th. Bonnie has a kickoff rally today at San Lorenzo Park at 1 o'clock. That's at the Duck Pond, and it's open to the public, unlike Michael Hernandez, apparently, who won't have any such open-to-the-public rallies. He's only inviting a select number. Could be he's afraid everyone would laugh him down the road or something for certain faux pas. He certainly has been one of the... although I've agreed with a lot of the things he said recently around housing in the beach flats and around the need to have real safe places on the west side in buildings, let's say, which Keith Sugar and Cynthia Matthews in an unholy alliance just cut dead at the June 27th council meeting late at night. Nonetheless, I think that Michael, I've told him honestly, I'm on the other side of most positions, and I regard him pretty much as a laughingstock in terms of what he's done and how he presents himself. And I have to say that because it's what I believe, and it would be unfair for me and dishonest for me to say otherwise. He also isn't holding an open kickoff rally. But as I said, he said some good things recently, and I don't want to discredit those things. I think that his willingness to question the city council's Seal Cirillo Uber Alles proposals, or it's simply falling in line with the planning commission on various items, something we have to fight. Rally for Bonnie Moore today, 1 to 3, San Lorenzo Duck Pond. After that, the same place, San Lorenzo Park, Steve Argue is holding a rally, 3 to 5, so you can get two for the price of one, or at least you can, you know, stay for one after having watched the other. And if you feel it's a little too proletarian for you, or you want to take a break, you can go up to 660 Escalona. That's near the campus where Ed Porter is having what will probably be a rather fancy party, with all the right people, reportedly Marty Wormhout, John Laird, all those policymakers that I have so regularly criticized on this show, because I believe they do significant disservice to civil rights here in Santa Cruz by their, not just their failure to advocate, but by the negative force they express around the modifications of the sleeping ban, either at the city or the county level. And I'm talking about Wormhout, who I know about. Laird has not specifically come out on these issues that I remember recently, but he's never been supportive either. And he's a former mayor. He should know better, and he does not. And he also is, I think, part of a little clique around the issues like the Dolphin Lee Project, which it's more like Andy Schifrin. Maybe John is not involved with this, so I'll step back from that allegation. Anyway, there's a party from 2 to 5, Porter's second kickoff rally up at 660 Escalona. So that's three different rallies today, in case you are in the rallying mood or you want to find some refreshments, because most of these places usually have refreshments. The ones held in public places, to their credit, are more accessible to people like poor and homeless people, who will probably show up just because it's a nice sunny day and there's a park and maybe a little free food. And that's all to the better. One of the problems we've been having with the candidate forums as well as the kickoff rallies in this go-around is the lack of homeless, poor people, people of color, Hispanic people, even students attending any of these rallies. Admittedly, the students are just coming back from UCSC, but Cabrillo students have been around, and they should know that it's worth going to these things. Instead, we've had the insiders at the SCAN forum and the proxy gatherers at the Women's Democratic Club, and you have the political hacks doing their thing without the people. And of course, in a way, the reason for this is that the real issues aren't being talked about. Of course, if somebody was really coming out there for rent control and renter protection, you'd have hundreds of people come to these rallies. But these are the gutless wonders who want to sort of sneak into office, with the exception of Steve Argue, let's say, who has come out strongly for rent control and renter protection. I'm not aware that Ed Porter has done that, and I could be wrong, and possibly we'll be getting a call from Fred Geiger, who's an Ed Porter supporter, and who is also going to be working on informing us about the Title IV building inspector's blank check, as I call it, that's coming up at City Council probably at 1 o'clock in the morning. It's becoming a favorite Keith Sugar deal or maybe it's Keith and his council deal, to put these items so late that nobody even wants to think about staying up to talk about them or even look at them on television if they're lucky enough or they happen to have cable TV at that time. I think proceedings are broadcast, I think, on Channel 27 or maybe Channel 26, if you have cable TV from the City Council. So we may be getting a call from Fred Geiger, who can tell us more about Ed Porter and what he's up to in terms of his position on rent control. We did have an interesting session with Ed and with Jake Olthoff and with Mark Premack, a much more conservative, business-oriented fellow, at the Homeless Working Group, which has been holding weekly meetings 3 to 5 on Fridays at the Holiday Inn in the Chamber of Commerce offices. A strange place for the Homeless Working Group to be meeting, but Michael Schmidt apparently had a conversion on the road to Damascus about a year ago and has been, or 9 months ago, and has been pushing for first safe sleeping places, then safe sleeping zones, he's been supportive of the idea that you don't kick out people of low income, Hispanic people, from their housing unless there's some housing for them to go into, which apparently is beyond the ken of people like Tim Fitzmaurice and even Keith Sugar. Just can't, the word guarantee is a word he cannot seem to form on his lips, because he voted with Catherine Byers, as you remember, on July 25th to ram through the purchase of the Dolphin apartment property, which will displace dozens of families, hundreds of people, without any guarantee that they'll be able to come back into the project. Even though they're not planning to bulldoze that housing immediately, Mercy Charities Housing has not declared it will guarantee the re-entry and continued residence of people there, provided they pay their rent, of course, and they aren't engaging in a violent activity toward next-door neighbors. And Mercy Charities Housing usually has a record of screening people out. And also there's the question of density requirements and the fact that people are sharing a lot of rooms the way students do up on campus in the Dolphin Apartments, half a block from the beach boardwalk. And just because they're Spanish-speaking and just because they're from out of this country and just because some of them are illegal, yes, I say the forbidden word, and sending money back to their folks and doing all the shit work that most of us won't do, is no reason to deny them housing so that you can put up a fancy little low-income affordable housing project for a select group of people that later get led into that project. And I'm not talking about some nepotism where Mercy Charities Housing is getting kickbacks, although they are getting paid for this, that's for sure. They're getting paid for this. I'm talking about the prestige that these politicos get, the social capital with the projects under their belt, and the idea they can pat themselves on the back that they're engaging in low-income housing providing, even as they kick more people out of low-income housing. So there actually is going to be a meeting tomorrow night of Residentes Unidos, for those who are interested. And this is a meeting, we've been having a lot of questions about meetings that have been called and then have not actually happened. I can pretty much guarantee you that this meeting will happen, even if it's only going to be a very small meeting with a very few number of people. But a number of people are coming to this meeting tomorrow. It's at 6:30. It's in the community trailer at the Lee Apartments. For those of you who don't know where that is, that's 124 Lee Brandt Street, half a block from the boardwalk. Everyone's invited. It's open to the community. I suppose that there have been the usual restrictions on City Council staff and members coming. They should contact the the manager of the property first, because there has been a concern about spreading false information on the property and seeking to snoop around with an aim to get into an eminent domaining of the property, a seizure of it. And that's another thing that's coming up is the question whether they're going to do that, because they have been trying to. You may remember on July 25th, the city said, we're not going to deal with the Lee property anymore. Those Lee people, they formed Residentes Unidos, and there are too many. They're resisting us too strongly, so instead we'll just go after the Dolphin, which is less well-organized, and there's an owner who's eager to sell. But back and forth, the letters between the owner and the city has been, as of September 16th, they had not met the requirements of owner Terry McElroy, who wanted $1.5 million. The city was only offering $1.3 million. And apparently, according to what I had heard from a number of sources, they were requiring that he rehab the whole thing, because the city doesn't want to rehab this property. If it starts to rehab the Dolphin or the Lee, which is what people have suggested, why not just rehab it, you know, and then work with it from that, maybe build on vacant land nearby? If you put federal money into rehabbing, then you have to retain it in perpetuity for 15 years. So they want to tear it down, see? They want to get rid of those unsightly structures, and they want to set up their own low-income housing project, but they don't want to guarantee that the people they're going to displace will be able to come back. And that's the reason they're going to be holding this meeting behind closed doors on Tuesday morning at 11:30, when City Council, for the first time in 2 months, brings up the issue of the Lee properties again. They've been repeatedly talking behind closed doors about the Dolphin property, which they apparently have, according to what I've heard from people on the Dolphin property, Veronica Lopez Duran, who some now regard as a traitor, originally was fighting for the rights of people around the beach flats and during the Beach South of Laurel plan, when they were trying to bulldoze the beach flats and the Canfield Kennedy Rotkin machine was trying to run that thing down, and that failed due to a lot of good organizing. We got the new council, and now we have a similar situation where Catherine Byers has decided to impose a project against the will of the people on the property without their negotiation participation and without any guarantees. And what's happening now, Veronica Lopez Duran joined the redevelopment agency to propagandize for this project, to push it forward, and now she's joined Mercy Charities Housing, surprise, surprise, the group that is building the project, the group that will develop the project and manage the project, the group that will ultimately own the project, even though for the first 15 years, I guess they'll be managers for the city, or at least under the Dolphin property business, they are going to be managing the property after it's given to them, after it's passed on to them by the city, or after the city purchases it. I'm not sure if they'll have title immediately. But again, the problem, as I said before, with the Dolphin apartments and the Lee, the Dolphin apartments certainly, and now it looks like the Lee apartments are back on the closed agenda. They had initially been severed from the discussion by resolution by Catherine Byers at the open session of City Council on July 25th, the redevelopment agency. Now suddenly, here it comes back again, but not in an open session, in a closed session, behind closed doors, where they are supposedly talking about these, quote, legal matters, you know, like property acquisition, like negotiating a price. Well, I've said this before, I say it again, a lot of us are suspicious that what's really going on behind those doors are substantive policy discussions that the council does not want to talk about in before an audience, because the audience would have input and ask rather obvious questions like, are the tenants going to have the guarantees, and why the hell aren't you talking about them? That was the last thing the tenants, unanimously on the Relocation Advisory Committee, told you: get us the guarantees and talk about the guarantees before you start talking about relocating us, planning for this, planning for that. We want assurances that nobody will be kicked out. And of course, the council didn't even talk about that, and that never even got back to the Relocation Advisory Committee as a report, because Fitzmaurice, Hernandez, and their puppet Yolanda Goda refused to hold a single meeting after that last meeting in May, even though the tenant majority repeatedly requested it. And on July 25th, City Council disbanded the Relocation Advisory Committee completely. Now, through closed session, through a behind-the-scenes process, they're going to attempt to go after the Lee property again, it looks like. And that's what this Residente Unidos meeting is about tomorrow night at 6:30. And people are invited. They're invited to come to the to the meeting at 124 Lebrand Street. And I am going to also hopefully find a segment of tape which tells you what to expect at the closed city council meeting, the kinds of things they talk about. And, of course, it's always amazing to me how the one tape that I want is always the one tape I can't find. This is one I had earlier, so it shouldn't be too hard to get a hold of. This is a tape of a closed city council meeting session, not of the session. They don't let you go to the closed city council meeting sessions after they've started. What they do, however, is they let you speak at the session right before city council closes. And you get to actually get a word or two in. And unfortunately, I can't find that. But what I'm going to do is read you what was read to the closed city council session by Veronica Lopez Duran on, I think it was September 12th, 2 weeks ago, or 2 weeks ago this coming Tuesday. She presented city council with about 10 or 20, maybe 30 sheets of paper. On one side was English, on the other side was a translation into Spanish, or you might say Spanish translated into English, and it said this: Dear City Council members, unfortunately we are unable to attend the council meeting at 12 p.m. as residents at 136 Lebrand, that's the Dolphin property. We would like to communicate the following to you before going into closed session, where you will be touching on the buying-selling of the properties at 131 and 133, which is Canfield's property across the street, the Rex Court, and 136 Lebrand, the Dolphin. 1. We are not part of Residentes Unidos. We would like to take an active part in the development of the project in Beach Flats. 2. We are in agreement with this council buying the properties at 131, 133, and 136 Lebrand as soon as possible. 3. We are not in agreement with the intimidation tactics used by Robert Norris, saying that we will be displaced by Christmas Eve. We hope that in your closed session today you will take the necessary action to move forward with the purchase of the already mentioned properties. Sincerely. And then there were about 30 different people who signed. Each sheet had one signature. These were presented to the closed session of City Council. Now, I tried to get a copy. It took me actually a week to get Veronica Lopez Duran, who profusely promised me she'd send it to me that afternoon, a copy of this statement, which I just read to you. And it was read again in the open oral communication session of the City Council at 7 o'clock on September 12th. But all those sheets of paper where individual tenants actually signed this with their names disappeared. I went to the city manager's office, talked to Martine, and I talked to Suzanne, who covers for Martine, and nothing. He had one page. That's all he had. And that was all he had one page with one signature. All the rest, he said, he didn't have. I was told by members of the city council staff that they regularly shred anything that's in the closed session on the table. I went to the city clerk's office and said, where's the documents given to be presented to the city council before the public, because it's not a closed session until they actually close it down. This oral open period allows the public to comment before they close it down. Where are those documents? And the answer was, we don't know. We don't have them. And it also should be said that the city clerk, as far as I know, kept no record of that closed session and of the open period before the closed session where I spoke, Becky Johnson spoke, I believe Bernard Klitzner spoke before that city council session. So, this is to me another example of a violation of the Open Meetings Act, where the public has a right to be informed of what's going on, to be able to participate in what's going on, to keep their eye on what the council is doing. Here you see public documents suddenly disappearing. Might be because of negligence. It might be because they don't want certain people like myself to know the names that are on these documents. It might be because the documents are forged or improperly put together, or because Veronica Lopez Duran, who several months ago was sort of revealed in a little scandal that happened where she put together a document where tenants from number 8 complained that the management was forcing them to be members of Residentes Unidos or else they would not get the place they wanted rented. They repudiated that. They said, that's not what we wrote. She put that in there. And Veronica Lopez Duran was the employee of the redevelopment agency then pushing to discredit Residentes Unidos, now pushing to push this sale as a Mercy Charities housing person as quickly as possible, and she's likely to be the new manager. And this is what happened at the evening session. Veronica Lopez Duran brought five or six people to the city council member tenants from the the Dolphin property. One of them read this statement. One of them sort of spoke about wanting to the city to buy the property. Several others were sort of vague in what they said. And I talked to a couple of them who said that they did not agree with this statement I just read, even though they'd come with her. So it wasn't quite clear what she was doing or how effective she was in even mobilizing her own troops. But she is, as the potential manager of the new Dolphin property, Veronica Lopez Duran is in a position to really influence the opinions, influence the actions of tenants there, not just by spreading misinformation and fear, not just by kind of using blandishments and using sort of offers of reward, but if people know she is the new manager, they are going to try to get on her good side. They really are. They don't want to be kicked out when half the people get sent packing because they decide they're only going to allow two people in a bedroom or two people in a unit and where there are now six or seven or eight. They want to be part of the lucky few that stays on, because the city won't give those guarantees, because Mercy Charities Housing won't give those guarantees. They want to be able to be in the lifeboat when the ship goes down. And that is something that hasn't yet been publicly discussed with any clarity. Hopefully we'll be bringing that up at the Residentes Unidos meeting tomorrow night at 6:30. And at City Council, both at 11:30, when the closed session starts, and you can speak again at the open interval before the closed session actually goes down and shuts down, and at 7 o'clock before oral communications, or 5 o'clock at the Redevelopment Agency on September 26th, which is all 2 days hence, City Council meeting today, of course, is the 24th. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrop Spear Robert. We're talking about a number of subjects ranging from... Well, if you've been listening, you'll know, and we're going to be continuing with a talk around the Dolphin. Hopefully, we'll have a conversation with the manager of the Lee, who hasn't been heard from in some time, and maybe we can get her on the phone. Stay with us.
Come gather around, people, wherever you advertise. And admit that the 60 sells Chrysler's and fries, and accept it that money don't talk but it lies. If your bottom line is worth saving, then you better start skimming all the anthems we've known for the stocks they are exchanging.
There's something happening here. What it is an ad for a beer. Guess you'd say, what can make me feel this way? My beer, my beer, my beer, talking about my beer. Songs that sell soap and sell cars and sell lifestyles, anthems of freedom now, corporate seagulls. Songs that bring back all those sweet memories, thanks Mitsubishi and who needs trees? When I'm downsized, lost my health care, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite songs and then I don't feel so bad about ads and my culture they're taking, bad about products that didn't need making, bad that they're buying the soul of my youth to sell me their shit. Well, it's slightly uncouth. When I'm lonesome or nostalgic, feel I'm gonna cry, I simply remember my favorite songs and then I break down and buy.
I'm going up the country where a man can be free. I'm going up the country where a man can be free. I'm going to some place where there's no goddamn Pepsi.
And
And that was Dave Lippmann from his album I Hate Walmart. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is your political bad boy about town, Uncle Robert Norris. And on the phone with me is Julie Costanza Gomez of the, well, you manage the Lee property, the Lee Apartments.
That's correct, down in the Beach Flats.
And you are a person who has expressed, you've been subject to a lot of hostility from Councilmember Tim Fitzmaurice. He's called you an agent of the landlord, and I guess in your case you are. You're an agent of the landlord. But he's called a lot of us who have been concerned about guarantees for the tenants before the property is handed over to Mercy Charities Housing, the Landlord Liberation Front. Now, you should come out right now and confess, how many thousands are you funneling to me, Julie?
How many thousands am I funneling what?
How much money are you paying me in our sexual favors?
Okay,
yes.
Well, it's just beyond numbers.
Well, I want to tell you, I do appreciate that Jaguar that you gave me.
Yeah, that was very nice.
And a little property in Capri.
And I like all the bumper stickers you put on it.
I try to, you know, leave my mark on the on the property that I go near, sort of like leaving my scent. The Lee property was kind of, you know, the center of organizing by Residentes Unidos. There was a time when, Residentes Unidos members came in large numbers to a SCAN meeting, and they had quite a confrontation with the mayor, not because they wanted to confront him, but because he sort of stood up as the sudden champion of Mercy Charities Housing, mm-hmm. said they lived in filthy, squalid conditions, packed in like sardines. Mm-hmm. They don't like, if they don't like it the way we live here, they could go back to Mexico, perhaps.
I also possess the only copy of the video of that.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been contemplating, depending on how good they behave, I've contemplating giving that to the news so it'll go on air.
Well,
so
you know, we actually
really have no alleged.
I think we beat you to the punch on that one, Julie. I think Becky Johnson, who had that, passed it on to the news media, and I think they did a little clip from it, but they didn't do as much of it as we'd hoped. You know, Becky was one of the people, and I think you may have videoed it too. But
well, no, she gave me her copy.
Oh, she did. Oh,
yes.
I see.
Uh
oh, you got to watch out, man.
Yes.
So,
no, I don't. They do.
But, you know, and that was, of course, the cause for believing, a lot of people were concerned that Mayor Sugar was making racist, those were racist statements as far as I was concerned, that they showed a racist, to me, they showed a racist predisposition on the city council to, you know, when it comes to talking about poor people of color who don't speak English, you don't have to negotiate with them in an upfront way and provide them with real guarantees. You don't have to keep your word to them.
No, because they can go back to Mexico.
Or El Salvador or Nicaragua or Guatemala or whatever strange country they come from, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
Why aren't they just grateful to wash our dishes and they can just shut up and, disappear somewhere at night, right?
Right.
Well, I know that on July 25th you had been... There were a number of meetings of City Council prior to the 25th where people kept... From the Dolphin and the League combined as Residentes Unidos, asked for guarantees that before City Council took any more action on a project, before they purchased any property, that they would write into law the guarantee that everybody who got kicked out of the existing property would be able to get back in either to the project or something equivalent, because after all, their housing was being destroyed. And I know in the Lee property, this is particularly important because both the Dolphin and the Lee, there's a community of people there, but in a way, wouldn't you say the Lee has been there longer and has a sort of a more closer-knit community? Or is that true?
I can't say that. You know, we've been there, we've all been there for a really long time. I'm talking over, like 20 years. And many of our residents are long-term residents. The manager of the Dolphin apartment started out in our apartment. She was one of our tenants. I saw each and every one of her children born.
Talking about Maria Gutierrez.
Yeah. And so, there's history down there.
Well, wait a minute. Aren't these apartments really just sort of a storing house for crack mules coming in over the border?
That's what I'm sure other people would think, but, there's just like... And I'm not going to say that doesn't happen down in the Beach Flats, because things happen in the Beach Flats, and they happen all over town. But there's it's mostly families living down there, and we've really been over backwards and done backwards flips and everything to try and help these people get the guarantees, just so that they g- get housing. I've been watching on TV. There was like in San Jose a fire, two different fires in the same building, and I saw the people on TV crying. Mm-hmm. These are working people. These are just like regular family people, and they can't find a place to live, and they're going to work from their cars.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just, you know, like there is a problem in the East Bay area of housing.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
And it's really, I can see that happening to our people,
mm-hmm.
Being without housing. There's nowhere to go. When I put an ad in the paper, I have another property, when I put an ad in the paper for an apartment, I get up to 70 people calling on it.
Mm-hmm.
Up to 70 calls, and these are
wow.
genuine people who will send me their information and everything. And something's wrong with those numbers.
Well, you know, the city claims that all these guarantee talk really isn't necessary because state and federal law and city policy, maybe city law, provides that's everything's in place and it's okay. And this is just a bunch of strange troublemakers connected with landlords and landlord managers like yourself who are, you know, trying to just cause trouble, maybe bid up the price of the property or, you know, just stir up some political hokum for their own personal gain.
Right.
That's been the line that has been used by Tim Fitzmaurice and Veronica Lopez Duran and other people. And I guess, it's not true, of course. We are concerned about the guarantees that people are not getting that they should have.
I'll tell you what the deal is. It is really bad business, and it's really not common for a landlord to care about their tenants. As far as when I say bad business, I'm talking about checkbook-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Not many landlords would do what we've done in order to make sure this happens for the people. I don't know of any. Terry McElroy certainly isn't going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The Seaside Company isn't going to do the things that we've done. And so we automatically look suspicious because of that.
Well, I know that was one of the reasons that the city, after first saying, well, you know, we got the guarantees already, but then they wouldn't put them into law. They decided they would sort of cut you out of the property, cut you out of the bidding process. They said
right.
on July 25th, we're going to proceed to buy the Dolphin property, we're
mm-hmm.
going to turn it over to Mercy Charities Housing, and we're going to discontinue negotiations with the Lee property. And this, to some extent, I guess, was a relief for some Lee people who thought, okay, good, the city's off our back, and we're
yeah.
well rid of them. And for the rest, though, there was the concern, well, if there really were a project, and if the city were willing to work with the tenants, it seems like a way of slapping the Lee tenants in the face and saying, because you stood up and asserted your rights,
yeah.
you're not going to be a part of this process.
Right.
So there was that kind of ambivalence. But in the main, I think there was relief. And now, I mean, what is your feeling about that? Was that...
Okay, my feeling?
I mean, do you think that's how... Was there relief, a lot of relief around that?
I think that the tension had been building so much, and the accusations and the misinterpretations of our supporting our tenants. I have to say, I was relieved to have a little break from them, and I was glad that August was a down month, because... I got really tired of hearing that I had threatened my tenants in any fashion to... I don't know what they think I have to gain from this. There's nothing to gain. And,
so we thought there was relief, and then suddenly, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, the city council agenda suddenly shows up with negotiations on the Lee property again in closed session. Now,
okay. Now, I'm going to tell you that. I got a call from the Sentinel
uh-huh.
the other day, soon as she found out it was on agenda,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to know if I was surprised about it. And no, I'm not surprised about it at all, and I'll tell you what I told her. I was disappointed it wasn't in the newspaper today. I told her I fully expected that the latter part of September we'd be hearing again that they wanted our property, and I was, I have a really good, I have a lot of common sense, and I also right now have a lot of patience because of that little break we got from them. I knew that they were going to need that property to finish their project because I sat in those rooms with the gang, and they had plan A and B and C, and those plans were on our property.
Well, you know, I think that may well be true. What's interesting, though, is I think it was a very clever move, because in taking the pressure off, they made the Lee people think, oh, we don't have to worry about this anymore. The Dolphin people thought, we don't have the support of the Lee people anymore, so now there's nothing we can do but go along with the plan. And I think it had the effect of kind of demoralizing and dividing the opposition. And then suddenly,
that's exactly what they did.
Suddenly they're back with this. What I find is interesting is they're back with this without it being presented in open session anywhere. In other words, in an open session they decided Lee is cut out. That's what they said. But then suddenly, without going into another open session to say, let's change our minds on this, and this is why, they're saying Lee is back, but they're doing it in closed session. And I've been saying that this is an example of the kind of behind-the-scenes process that goes on, which makes us all so really lack any confidence in what they're doing. And it's really a bad process, which results later in polarization and confrontation, because the people involved aren't consulted, because the public and the tenants and the owners and everybody else don't know what's going on. Instead, it's just a little clique in power that's imposing its own will, getting its agenda down, and then laying it out later in open session kind of as a fait accompli.
Yeah. What they needed to do was separate us, because we were, our apartments and the other apartments were uniting, and they were we were coming down strong,
mm-hmm.
and we were carpooling down to the city hall, and people were actually, at one point, they were bringing their kids, and I looked out the window one time and saw all the kids in the fountain. It was a really hot day, but you know what? People showed up. Let's put it that way. You know, everybody was showing up, and everybody was speaking,
mm-hmm.
and I think it was very important for the city to get us separated.